Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
We don't normally start off a show with a user comment, but I don't know if there's anything more fitting than what Andrew Seiler just put in our live YouTube chat. Yes, John Sheeran, the Cincinnati Bengals win another playoff game. They are 4-1 in the last 2 years in the playoffs, with their one loss being in the Super Bowl and driving for the win in that game. They just keep on rolling. They keep beating teams. People keep doubting them, and here we are. Man, you were there. I mean, I'm Anthony, by the way, and he's John, the man, the myth, the legend, the good luck charm. He was at the game last night. I tried to get there, man. Man, flights were unbelievable, so I couldn't get out there. But I'm sure it was epic. You, sir, have a story to tell about your experience at the stadium. Did you do the tailgates? Did you either go to gyms or go to Bengal Bomb Squad or both or any of that?
I went to the very luxurious Hilltop lot with the, you know, like the whole concrete action going on there. Very nice place to tailgate with my family, some cousins, some friends. Did the whole Thunderstruck circle thing in the beginning, you know, so a lot of liquid was flowing before the game. Game was insane. Like, obviously, the crowd was great. It was very much like what the Bills game was in the first 10 minutes of that one. They had the light show in the beginning and everything. Just a phenomenal game. January 15th is it's pretty good for Bengals fans nowadays.
You know, it is.
Exactly 1 year ago is when the Raiders game happened, and then you had a game that ended up finishing in a very similar way as well. And just real quick, though, because it was like the game ended at like around 11:10, 11:15 Eastern time around here. Traffic was insane. I was parked a few blocks up north in downtown, and I wanted to just like, you know, chill. Just to let the traffic die down. So I went to the Blind Pig, and, you know, just on a whim, like I'll just chill here, you know, I'll get a drink. Ran into some cool dudes named Connor and Kyler, and they were buying me drinks. They were buying me shots. I'm like, oh crap, what was going on?
Wow.
And
wow.
Yeah. So like, you know, after a couple of drinks, I had to go to the bathroom. You know, I hadn't gone since like before the game, and I'm in the bathroom and I'm hearing like this yelling going on outside in the bar, like more than usual. And I walk out and everyone has their phones out and like someone's talking on the speaker and it's not the DJ. It's Zach Taylor. He's there with the game ball. And I was in the bathroom for half of his epic speech that is now on viral. But I saw him give the ball to like the bartenders. I saw the end of the speech. I saw him like walk off and high five everyone. I'm like, crap, dude, I just missed half of this epic moment. I was here off a whim, had no idea he was going to be there. And yeah, I was pissing away. You know, all this beer that I drink, and I miss Zach Taylor. So
well, yeah, you never, what is it? What's the old saying? You never actually own a beer or drink the beer. You just rent it. Right. It just, yeah. You know, wow. Is Blind Pig the one that's the rooftop one that's kind of outdoors?
Yeah. So it's just like
across from the stadium, right?
Right. It's right there. Yeah. So, I mean, Zach just,
oh my God, that's awesome, dude.
Away.
That's awesome. I'm sorry you missed part of it, but
I mean, honestly, that was like the last thing that I remember from last night. I'm not even sure how I got home at that point, but it was a great night. Most of it was a blur. Shout out to Connor and Kyler, though. My buddy's a Blind Pig.
Nice. That's awesome. And the jackass of all trades, our friend here. John needs to become our scout. We need someone to find us offensive linemen. We will talk about that. There are some offensive linemen issues with the Bengals, but they come up victorious in this one. 24-17, the Baltimore Ravens with Tyler Huntley just cannot get past the the 17 point threshold. They just can't. They don't know how to do it. They came awfully close with of course one of the biggest plays in Cincinnati Bengals history. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But all right, John, just your overall impressions of how the team played in this one, because we knew it was going to be a dogfight. We knew there was going to be, you know, some chippiness to it, and there was early. But then, you know, it just kind of settled in. AFC North, kind of slugfest, and Bengals come out on top. Not the prettiest win, but they come out on top.
Yeah, I mean, we all knew kind of what this game was going to be. Like you said, along with the chippiness, you knew that the Ravens defense is going to show up. It's an incredible unit, knows the Bengals offense really well. But I still think the Bengals offense played pretty well for most of this game. It was towards the end when they couldn't finish it out, and that was all like last year's a playoff win against the Raiders, where they had a chance to really close the game in the fourth quarter, and they just let mistakes kind of get in the way. You saw, you know, Jackson Carmen break down a little bit at left tackle. He was doing fine, I think, for the first 20 or so snaps that he had, but he ended up giving up the sack. He had the false start. Just a lot of things that kind of come with the territory of just being thrown out there in a position that he hasn't really played in since college, obviously. So there's that issue to obviously look out for. There were some drops that were had, like Ja'Marr Chase had one, Joe Mixon had one, T. Higgins had one, albeit that one was pretty close. So there was offensive efficiency to be had in the first half. That's where he had the touchdown. And then there was that one stretch where you had right after a Ja'Marr Chase false start, you had back-to-back completions to Chase, who creates separation off comeback routes. Then you had the near touchdown for Hayden Hurst. That would have been so sweet.
Oh, man, it would have been.
Against the Ravens in the playoffs. So the offense, I think, overcame some struggles early on. But you do have to wonder now that you have three backup offensive linemen probably starting against the Buffalo Bills. In this game specifically, you had a very low success rate passing the ball on first and second down, relying a lot to move the chains on third down. It's a lot kind of like last year, right? You're overcoming some bad protection, and you're relying on some of those high variance plays that you can't always, you know, expect to, you know, keep up with consistency over a week-to-week basis. So this is obviously a tough defense. It's the toughest one they have to face, but those are just, I think, some issues that you have to keep an eye on.
I think from what I saw, and I plan to rewatch and especially hone in on him, but I think Max Sharping did okay. I mean, there were some issues up front, obviously, but I mean, for the situation he was thrown in, I didn't see him being a glaring liability. But obviously, the team only mustered 2.8 yards per carry as a team. I think it was 51 total yards on the ground. Got outrushed by 100 yards on the ground by the Baltimore Ravens. The one thing that kind of stuck in my craw, I guess, a little bit with this one, John, is that you knew. And now let me back up. The Bengals defense, I could name a player, and they probably had a big play, a positive big play in this game. Zachary Carter had a couple of nice tackles. Chris Collinsworth was all over that on the telecast. BJ Hill has a sack. Sam Hubbard, obviously, the return for the touchdown. Logan Wilson, Jermaine Pratt teaming up on that one just name a player, and they likely had a big play at this point. The problem was is they didn't string them together very often, and they, you know, the game plan, I think a lot of people knew what the game plan was going to be for the most part by the Baltimore Ravens on offense with Tyler Huntley at quarterback, right? It was going to be a lot of running. You're going to get the occasional pass to Mark Andrews, maybe an occasional pass to the wide receivers there, but it was going to be a lot of Mark Andrews. It's going to be a lot of the three-headed monster running back, and then Tyler Huntley trying to do some things as well. I thought that they did pretty well, save for one or two occasions, against Tyler Huntley, the runner. I think they did, you know, pretty well against him. The running backs, though, I think they had 4.5 yards per carry as a team. The Baltimore Ravens, 150 yards on the ground. You kind of knew this was coming, and yet still this Bengals defense still kind of allowed them to do a lot of the things they wanted to do and keep this game close, which was a little concerning to me.
Yeah, I think you had great games out of Reader, BJ Hill, and Zach Carter, yep, who I feel like, yep, had one of his best games of the season. But that's all in the interior, right? You had those guys out there in that 5-2 front for the majority of the game. Most of the time against Lamar Jackson, you're typically going out there with a 4-3 defense, which is why you see Keem Davis-Gaither more times against the Ravens than any other team. That wasn't really the case in this one. They went with those heavy personnel packages up front. And when the Ravens tried to rush up the middle, I felt like the Bengals did a good job of holding the ground. But the Ravens do just this great job of sealing off the edge for some of these exterior runs. Their tight ends do a great job of blocking. I feel like, you know, Sam Hubbard and Trey Henderson maybe didn't have their best games of setting the edge. And then you had some of those outside zone plays where you had the linebackers just over pursuing and at least the cutback lanes for guys like, you know, Justice Hill and J.K. Dobbins, who are just insane athletes. And, you know, they definitely got the better of the second level of the Bengals defense from time to time, and it led to some of those explosive plays. So I feel like Tyler Huntley played really well in this game. He made a lot of plays out of the pocket, made a lot of great throws, a lot more throws than I would have expected him to make and actually complete. So, you know, he kept him in the game more than I think most people expected. But while Sam Hubbard's play, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, is obviously the highlight here, I think there are also some other plays on defense that kind of went under the radar. Jesse Bates obviously saved the touchdown right beforehand, yep. and he tackled him at the 2-yard line. But I think Bates saved another touchdown earlier in the game when it was right before the first half ended, and you had Huntley rolling out to the right, and there was like a levels concept to the right, but he threw across his body back towards the back side of the field where Mark Andrews was, and you had two Ravens blockers kind of sealing out both Mike Hilton and Jesse Bates, but Bates kind of knifed through the block and made a tackle on Andrews, and that forced the Ravens to call a timeout there at the end of the second half, but potentially saved a touchdown there. Ravens only settled for three. That pretty kind of changed the game a lot at that point. And then Cam Sample with his pass deflection right before Jermaine Pratt and Logan Wilson forced that fumble. There was a lot of key moments in this game.
They're going to get two tackles for loss as well. I mean, right. he was in there doing a lot of stuff too. Yeah.
Yeah, and like Hilton didn't play that much because, again, the Bengals were mainly in that 5-2 fronts, but he made the most out of his snaps. And we really shouldn't forget Akeem Davis's Gaither's interception, which is a lot like what Trey Flowers did against Tom Brady. It was a very similar coverage, and he read the play almost exactly the same way, and he managed to catch the ball. So a lot of great moments that are going to get overshadowed over time because we're going to look back at the Hubbard play and the legacy of that, but just another phenomenal game by this defense, just making plays when it counts.
You know, again, it was more just kind of instead of, you know, just making play after play, it was just kind of like big plays that came at really opportune times. Right. Or if there were a play after play, it was like one play that set up the big play type of thing. So, you know, I guess I just really look at that 17 play drive that Baltimore had and you go, oh, boy, that was just God, it felt like it was forever since the Bengals had the ball again after that one. But hey, they're playing well. I do give Baltimore credit because they did with a backup quarterback, and I mean they stuck to a script and a blueprint as to how they should have won this game, and they basically stuck to it and came pretty close. I mean, they just kind of made one more turnover than the Bengals did, and that resulted in a touchdown. Game was pretty close throughout, and we kind of figured it would be. But anyway, that's a little bit on the defense and whatnot. Concerns about the running game, though, John, because I saw a couple of spots in this game. There are a couple of early downs where the Bengals were able to kind of shoot off a nice run and get a nice gain from mixing 6 yards, 7 yards here and there. But for the most part, trying to get any consistency there, and I know it's going to be difficult against this defense as well as with two and then three offensive linemen out of the lineup. I just concerned for balance, I guess, in keeping other teams honest going forward here, especially with the offensive line issues.
Yeah, and I think they're not going to be apologetic and just, you know, letting Joe cook and just putting him out in shotgun for 40 times a game. But at the same time, when you're playing a defense like that with fast as hell linebackers and just a defensive front that's just really stout, like Matabuke, Calais Campbell, Broderick Washington, those guys, they don't give up a lot of ground. So you're in this situation where, okay, you can't really run up the middle because Max Sharping can't get a lot of push. Cordell Volson was having some struggles backing on the block side, or blocking on the backside, excuse me. And then when you try to run outside, you have Patrick Queen and Roquan Smith just scraping over the top, right? And they can get out to the edge really fast. So it was not a great opportunity for this run game to really catch alive. But it's kind of surprising, though, because the Ravens defense entering, I think, last week, in the last 5 weeks of early season, they were like bottom eight and rushing success rate allowed. Yeah. So for whatever reason, they were not having great success stopping the run entering this game. But the Bengals offensive line is just going through some struggles right now. They're just interchanging a lot of guys because of injury, and I think it's muddying up the scheme a little bit, and you have to really adjust what you can do with the personnel out there, and then they have to go through this whole thing again now with a new left tackle.
Well, I don't know. Overall, I mean, I some of the offensive issues. I called it kind of efficient and cautious. Those were kind of the words that I used, and careful, I guess. Maybe not cautious, but careful. Meaning, you know, you had to limit the turnovers. The Bengals did have one on the Hurst fumble, but, you know, Joe protected the ball well, had two touchdowns, and, you know, did what he needed to do. But still, the explosiveness wasn't there. And I personally kind of just chalk it up to the defense that they played. I don't know if you see it the same way, just because this defense kind of just has star players or very good players in all levels of their defense.
And again, like, they know the Bengals very well. Like, they know what they like to do. Yeah. They know what they're trying to do. And I feel like it's almost the opposite in a way for the Bengals defense, because you had Jesse Bates, I think after the game, say, like, yeah, we're no more triple option. We're like, we're going on to real football now. We're moving on to Buffalo. Like, I think there's a frustration in defending like what the Ravens do in the run game. And that kind of leads to some of these performances, right? You have to change a lot of your keys and everything because of what the Ravens can do and the versatility that comes with it. So while the Ravens are very familiar with the Bengals scheme and everything, and they have the athletes to match up with it, it's an aspect that the Bengals kind of struggle with, and just defending the unpredictability of the Ravens scheme. And I'm sure they're glad that they don't have to deal with it anymore.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity, but giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on, and there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Out of the way. What's in the way, though, John, is Jonah Williams' injury. We don't know the timeline on it. He dislocated, I think, the other kneecap that he dislocated from the very first game against this team. Now, in that game, he left for a few plays and actually ended up coming back and playing. And in that, I think he ended up spraining a ligament and, you know, dislocating that kneecap. No structural damage there. They have to see what's going on here. I think we're waiting for more word on that, at least as of earlier on Monday. But there was a knee dislocation. You know, you can't just base what happened and how he was able to recover and play through that. You can't automatically apply that here, right? I mean, it's a different leg, different injury, all that kind of stuff. We have to see if there's more structural damage. So, you know, there's a chance he comes back sooner than we think. There's a chance that it's worse than this last one, and he's not going to play at least for this week. So what do the Bengals do here on the offensive line? It looks like Cap is not going to be around for the postseason either. What do we do?
I like Deja Vu's comment. Tape it up and get him out there.
Yeah. Rub some dirt on it.
Well, here's the thing, man. Like, it popped out of place in week 5, and then they they put it back in place. Like, they're able to do that, but not every knee dislocation is the same. Football players are insane. This man has dislocated both of his knees in a two-month span and has still managed to play through one of them.
Side note, do you know how gross, at least aesthetically, a dislocated kneecap is? It is disgusting. And the fact that a guy went out there the first time that it happened and went back out there and played a couple of plays later and then had it happen again to the other leg, gross. Anyway, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, I mean, I appreciate you doing so because we need to emphasize how insane this is and that the fact that it happened twice, and obviously not every knee dislocation is the same. This one was a little bit more severe and it happened to the other one. So like, it wasn't just a case of, oh, it popped out again, let's just pop it back in place. No, it was a completely new knee. It was a completely different type of dislocation. And I believe Zach Taylor said he was week to week. So whatever that means, but he's not going to play this week because
the old week to week, the old Zach Taylor week to week. Yeah.
So yeah, like I wouldn't count on him returning for the postseason. Say they make it even to the Super Bowl. Like maybe he could come back for the Super Bowl. But again, it's just almost pointless to kind of identify what week to week means when you're talking about an injury where you don't have a ton of information on it.
Can they get by with what you saw from Jackson Carmen, what we know about Jackson Carmen, at least the playing stuff? Can they get by with him at left tackle again, a position he played in college, and but immediately when they drafted him, they're like, you're going to play guard. So, I mean, is this something that has some viability? The one thing that kind of gives me a little bit of a spark of positivity I'm hopeful for the kid, but if you go back to week 18 and when he was the tackle eligible, the extra tackle on the field, and he caused that scrum on the other side where he just absolutely buried the man he was blocking. See, these are the types of things with Jackson Carmen that I've noticed where it's just wildly inconsistent, where you get absolutely dominant snaps and you get snaps where you go, what just happened? What just happened here? So to me, it's just, you got to be able to level that out if you're Jackson Carmen and still have some of those dominating snaps, but just not so many wildly inconsistent snaps that you put on tape as well.
Yeah, it kind of, I actually don't know what the inactive list was. I don't know if Deontay Smith was active for this game, but like, he's like a left tackle for them. So if both of them were active, I would have assumed that he would have gone in, but I guess he wasn't active in this game. I think the Isaiah Prince variable kind of comes back into play here because you had him not actually going to start at right tackle. That was more smoke than mirrors, but like, he's practicing at tackle for the practice squad. He's gotten those second team reps. I think, you know, he has experience at left tackle. I don't know if you move Hakeem Adeniji to left tackle now, even though he was a left tackle in college. If he's comfortable now at right tackle, he's gotten those practice reps, maybe you want to keep him there. There's just a lot they have to think about. I think personally, I would definitely consider, you know, seeing what Isaiah Prince has at left tackle now, because you're down to basically no options. I don't know if you can trust Jackson Carmen starting an entire game at left tackle.
Yeah. Well, they've got a lot of, you know, moving parts and things to figure out on that side. Well, both sides of the line now. So they got past it last year with, you know, these four sack games in the postseason and what was it, 8 or 9 or whatever against the Titans. I mean, just ridiculous numbers. How many times Burrow got sacked 4 times and got hit 8 times last night? That I keep saying it's not going to be sustainable, at least to the Super Bowl. And I know they got there last year while weathering the storm, but they have to figure, they can't keep doing that because it ultimately bit them in the butt in the last game. And they can't rely on similar results. I know they can't help it because they made major investments on the offensive line and they've lost a lot of major ones. So I don't know, man. I they need to find a way to be able to weather this and not rack up the amount of sacks and hits. We know Burrow's going to run into a couple. He always does that. That's just his brand of football, but you can't hover around, you know, 4, 5, 6 sacks a game in the postseason. It's going to kill you.
Especially against a team that doesn't really blitz that much. Like the Ravens like to disguise, right, you know, where they're sending pressure and everything, but they're not like overloading. This isn't Don Wink Martindale calling that defense anymore, but the Ravens know how to pressure Burrow even with a healthy offensive line, right? So if you were to tell me that he was going to have 3 reserve linemen in this game, I would have assumed at least 4 sacks, regardless of what Burrow can do in and out of the pocket. And I feel like he did a good job of managing pressure for the most part in this game. There were some sacks that he avoided, some sacks he just had to take, but that's just as part of it, right? As part of playing an elite defensive front like that, I think we should give credit to the Bengals for how they handled the interior part of the line this offseason, with drafting Cordell Volson, developing him so quickly into a solid starter, signing a durable guy like Alex Kappa. Like, that injury, you can't really expect it. Like, it's just a very unfortunate thing that he had to go through. But the depth along the interior with, you know, claiming Max Sharping to back him up and, you know, have him be a solid, okay player, like that whole plan and execution was pretty good. Unfortunately, though, they just entered the season with two tackles with an injury history. Like, Jonah Williams has suffered injuries in his past. Leo Collins, his whole contract was baked with the realization that he's missed time in the past due to injuries, and now both those guys are going to be out for the postseason, and they don't really have a ton of options. So, like, they're going to enter the offseason with a lot of, you know, questions regarding the long-term and short-term viability of their tackle spots.
Rob Duncan asks, how are Buffalo's defensive ends? I don't really hear much about them. Well, there's no Von Miller anymore, and they have Gregory Rousseau, who's got at least when we were entering the Monday night game, I think he had 7 sacks or something. So he was playing decent football up to that point, but obviously not having Von Miller is a huge, huge loss. So, you know, but they're at that point too, we were looking at a full no Leo Collins, but I mean, Kappa and Jonah were obviously in there. So kind of a little bit of a coin flip there, and I use that, of course, facetiously, given the situation and the Bengals going to Buffalo now. No coin flips, none of that stuff happening. No neutral field, though, either, John, and that's the reality of the situation. But the Bengals will take it how they had a tough path to the Super Bowl last year. They will have a seemingly tough one this year. We've got one more playoff game to go before we get to a little bit of a more fun topic and something we want to talk about with a big play from last night. What were your impressions of all of the games so far this weekend? Obviously, the Chargers-Jags game was just absolutely bananas. But, I mean, I don't know. Were you surprised by a lot of what you saw? Were you kind of playing out the way you saw it? I don't know.
Well, for starters, I have been betting a little bit since draft betting became legal in Ohio. I put down like $1 on Ravens money line and the spread at the beginning of the fourth quarter. So you're welcome for that. Fading my own cold streak is the way to go in order to get the wins that you need. But you had three playoff games featuring divisional opponents, and all three of them were pretty wacky, right? Seattle gave San Francisco a scare in the second quarter. Miami gave Buffalo a heart or like an aneurysm with what happened with Skylar Thompson and the fact that Mike McDaniel couldn't call a play for most of the game, and that was one of the reasons why, unfortunately, they just fell up short. So you have teams who are familiar with each other, and that leads to a lot of wackiness and craziness, even in the postseason. You know, it doesn't really matter how well you're playing leading up to here. It's a whole new season, right? And you had both of those favorites at home, both two seeds, you know, get, you know, almost lose. And it was a real possibility for the Bills. So seeing that before this game, like, it made me realize that, yeah, like, it's very possible that the Ravens are going to give the Bengals a legitimate scare in a really good and competitive game. That's exactly what happened. So I think now you have pretty much all the best teams remaining at this point. There wasn't really an upset. I don't really know if you consider Giants or Vikings an upset. I think everyone was kind of predicting that the Vikings would kind of fall up short here, but they're moving on. And now they got a team that they faced a couple weeks ago, but they didn't get to play a full game.
Bahamas. I think it was last night someone was tuning in from France at 7 a.m. That was for a post-game show. And now we got Keith, our buddy from the Bahamas. This is awesome. Worldwide, John Sheeran, that's what this show is. And this show is called The Orange and Black Insider. It is a Bengals podcast, part of the Cincy Jungle Podcast Network, where you can get our show, the show from Bengal Jim and Friends. They've had a lot of great guests. We've been catching you up on the audio side with their interviews and whatnot. So hopefully you've been enjoying that. And of course, the coach, Matt Minnick, giving you chalk talk and coach speak, those episodes on the channel. So subscribe through your favorite audio streamer, whether that's iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, all of them. We are there. And then if you like and prefer the video, do us a favor, give us a thumbs up on the video and on the YouTube channel, that is. Subscribe to it. There is a little icon underneath that Cincy Jungle icon beneath John's little window there. Click that. Subscribe. Click the bell to be notified when we go live, when new content is available. We're going to keep peppering you with content, I'm telling you, as these games keep going. And, of course, you can give a thumbs up to the Cincy Jungle Facebook page. We stream live there, as do the others on the podcast network. Thanks for everybody's support. Well, John, I don't know if you heard, there was I don't know, kind of a big defensive play last night. Did you hear anything about that?
I saw it. I didn't believe it until it was like halfway over.
Well, a lot of talk about, you know, what do we call this thing? And what, I want to know what, where you would put this in Cincinnati. I mean, I know, you know, obviously there's some recency bias and all that kind of stuff, but I would like to hear where you would place this play by Sam Hubbard, Jermaine Pratt, Logan Wilson. Where would you put this in terms of biggest Bengals plays ever? Not just defensive plays, but ever. Obviously Pratt's interception last year was a biggie. You know, there's plenty by the 1988, 1982 squad, but I mean, this has to be top five, top three easily in your opinion. How loud was that place after this happened? I saw Rob said something about, you know, that the concrete was shaking because of the jumping and the noise and all that kind of stuff. I mean, how loud was that place when this play occurred?
It was so bizarre because, like, in my mind, the Ravens were at the one or whatever, and they're about to take the lead. And I'm like, I don't want to start the offseason, like, go through all these offseason content so quickly now. We got questions to cover. Like, I don't want to do this yet. Like, is this really going to happen? And next thing you know, Sam Hubbard has the ball at the 20. And then at the 30, and then at the 40, and then he kept going. I'm like, oh my God, no one's going to catch him. And I didn't even see the play when it happened. Like, I was looking to my left, I think, when the play was happening, because I thought he was going to score. I thought Huntley was just going to just sneak it in, and the Ravens were going to take the lead. So I was, like, in a completely different, like, state of mind while it was happening. And then I, like, realized, like, I was came out of shock that it was happening, and then I could hear everything, and it was definitely loud. It was definitely ruckus. There was a lot of people in disbelief of what was actually happening, but they were just like, go, Sam, go, obviously. So, like, yeah, one of the craziest plays that I ever witnessed, for sure, definitely in person. I would still give the edge to Playoff P making that play exactly a year ago, just for the implications of what that play meant to win that game in that specific moment. It was literally the last play of the game. It was a walk-off interception to break a 31-year playoff drought. I feel like the significance of that still overtakes this specific moment, but this is also the play that confirmed that the Bengals were going to win in a postseason game in back-to-back years, which has never happened before, right? It's Sam Hubbard. It's the Cincinnati kid. It's the guy who, close friend of the show, by the way, you know, Bengal through and through, a Cincinnati kid through and through. For him to just end up with the ball like that and have two other players, Jermaine Pratt and Logan Wilson, you know, spark that play to actually happening, it's a crazy play. It's going to end up in Bengals lore for history.
I think what may happen with this play is if the Bengals go on a deep run again, if they end up winning a Super Bowl, going to the Super Bowl, what have you, yeah, let's just say it's a similar, if not better, path than what they carved out for themselves last year. I think we then look at this play and maybe you start saying, well, this was the play that got him a Lombardi trophy, right? Or this was the play that started them to get. Now, granted, they could make a bunch more miraculous ones in the next game or the next handful of games, however long they last here. So, you know, we could say that. But I think we do need to wait to see how the rest of this postseason plays out, because all of a sudden this play could be the one where you go, wow, you know, the Bengals won the Super Bowl, and you look back at this game, and this was kind of, you know, the Sam Hubbard play. I'll put that back on the screen. I'm still showing the Pratt one. But, you know, the Sam Hubbard play is the one where you go, oh, man, this is the one, you know. This was the one that got him over the hump. And I think what made this one, I don't know if it's top over Pratt for me yet, but I think what made me think that it could be was just the sheer – it's one of those plays where you look at it and you see, like, a lot of good fortune with it. You know, that ball being batted out of Tyler Huntley's hand could have gone any number of directions, and it just landed right where Sam Hubbard was. And when you talk about teams that end up, you know, winning Super Bowls, or you document teams that are really, really good, or, you know, have a really good season, these are the types of plays where you go, how in the hell did that just happen? Like, it just the fortunate bounce of the football. Now, granted, fortune comes from prepared and, you know, all that kind of stuff. The other thing that I think about with this, and someone put it on Twitter and I retweeted them, it's just, man, this year, this Bengals defense, even when they're not having their strongest game either by a yard standpoint or point standpoint or what have you, they seem to have this weird knack of coming up with a gigantic turnover at one of the most critical points in the game. Gigantic. I mean, granted, that the interception that Dakeem Davis-Gaither had was huge because it was early and it gave the Bengals a touchdown early, but this was unbelievable. This was a 14-point swing in this game right here, this play, and ultimately was the difference in the football game. So that is kind of where I think it's got to be up there in probably in the top three. I think Pratt is there now, but I think as this postseason hopefully continues on for a longer stretch, we may look at this thing and go, this might be the greatest play really ever in Bengals history.
They've had four playoff wins in a 366 day span, and each one of those wins there was a play like this. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy to me that thinking, like, I'm almost desensitized to these moments now because they just happen so frequently. And I think when it comes to, you know, luck versus preparedness, like, there was nothing lucky about what Jermaine Pratt and Logan Wilson did. Like, that's just training, that's going for the ball,
right?
Situational awareness where the yard line is. The luck is obviously where the ball ends up, and Sam Hubbard just being at the right place at the right time and then running.
Right.
I think he said just under 18 miles per hour in a dead sprint, which, another factor here that he explained, but I don't think a lot of people realize, like, that was such a long drive. And obviously, if you're a defensive lineman who's not getting rotated out of the game, you're completely gassed. And then you're running, I think it was officially 123 yards from when the play started to when the play ended. And Sam was just dying for oxygen. Like, I can't imagine what was going on with his lungs at that moment. But there's just probably so much adrenaline going on. But like, these plays just happen so often now for the Bengals. And it's like we're getting fatigued from just the clutchness of this defense.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
I want to point this out, and this has nothing really to do with the Hubbard play, but I'll have to find this here if I can pull it up. But did you see how close it was to that Hail Mary at the end, kind of being caught? I didn't think it was that close. I just kind of thought it was sort of in the area, and it got batted down based on what I could see from TV. And then there was, you know, another angle of it. I'll have to try and find it here on Twitter. I should have had this pulled up here, but man, it basically, a guy was kind of diving for it and it went right through his hands, and it was really close. And it kind of, as we look at this play and we, you know, the Hubbard play, and we talk about, you know, oh wow, that just the lucky bounce there, but just how fortunate some of these things just end up going your way. And that's kind of what, you know, I mean, sometimes obviously you're a good team, you've got a good football team, but some of these fortunate bounces and things like that that go your way, that also kind of paints the picture of a potential deep postseason run or Super Bowl team.
Yeah, these moments matter a lot more. Well, obviously, when you do put together that run, and if not, they just kind of become like a little blip in the radar and everything like that. But I think it's fair to say that, like, the Ravens had definite chances to win this game, and the Bengals just made the plays they needed to make to snatch it from them. Like, the Ravens played really well. They gave the Bengals a great shot. I think they were definitely motivated, just being the underdogs all week. But Anthony, I want you to take me through that final moment, because Chris Collinsworth, as you have mentioned a lot, has never called a Bengals win, right? Like, they're always on Sunday Night Football, have never been able to win with him in the booth. So when James Prochet drops that Hail Mary, like what was that call like? Was he like cathartic?
Well, where we were was kind of loud, so I couldn't really hear. We were with a group of people, so I couldn't really hear specifically. Well, I'll have to go back and listen to that. He's always been pretty good about being unbiased and all that stuff, and even some people think that he's too biased against the Bengals and whatnot. But I would like to think that he had that trademark smile and that, you know, what he does, and he's probably got to be feeling pretty good for that team, because, man, as I mentioned, I think it was either Thursday or on Twitter or what have you, he hadn't seen him win on Sunday Night Football. The only time the Bengals have won on NBC's Sunday Night Football, when they gained rights to that game in 2006, It was the Jermaine Pratt interception game last year, and that was Saturday. And Tirico called that one with Drew Brees, I believe it was not. Yeah. So, you know, he has not seen them play or seen a win, but I would like to think. I don't think he's too, you know, yay Bengals, you know, on the air. I don't think he was doing that, but I think, you know, probably I would like to think that deep down he was kind of, you know, fist pumping and doing his thing. Unfortunately, I couldn't hear too well what he was saying at the end there.
Well, I mean, how, like, were you watching at a party? Like, did everyone go nuts? Like,
what, it was at a restaurant. Like? Yeah, it was at like a pizza joint. Yeah. I mean, we didn't have like a gigantic group, and it wasn't like a super packed place, but you know, our group was just kind of celebrating and watching and all of that. So, you know, I mean, yeah. But overall, just an incredible game. And it's so weird that, you know, for a lot of it, it was like a lot of offensive plotting, a lot of like methodical, like the 17 play drive and all that kind of stuff. There's all that. And then there's just one or two big wacky plays that end up occurring that, you know, kind of tell the tale. So, and that's what happened here. So Bengals come out victorious. They head to Buffalo next week after Buffalo survives a squeaker as well. Let's talk a little bit about some of the headlines and whatnot. We talked about already about injuries along the offensive line and everything. There's some stuff going on with the Ravens, and you know, it's kind of like, well, how much of this do you actually want to give fire to? But we'll say this one was pretty interesting here. J.K. Dobbins sounds off on lack of workload, said he's, quote, tired of being held back. Now, there's a lot of quotes that came out today, John, from the Baltimore side and Baltimore players. Roquan Smith said they were the better team but still lost. And then you've got this one from J.K. Dobbins, which I find to be kind of talking out of both sides of your mouth here, because you're coming back from a bad injury, and I think the team was maybe trying to, at least in some part, take a little pressure off yourself from the injury and ease yourself back in. Now, granted, if he's ready, he's ready to go. He's ready to take on a bigger workload. But I also think, too, I know he wants his carries, his touches, all that stuff. They put up 150 rushing yards between the three backs. They were all effective last night. So that's where I kind of give this one pause a little bit. And I don't want to say, oh, boy, the wheels are coming off. There's dissension in the Baltimore Ravens. But this was just an interesting quote that I stumbled across and was, I don't know, a little bit surprised by it.
I find it so funny that two of the players that were held out of the Week 18 game, J.K. Dobbins and Marcus Peters, just became storylines this game and adding more fuel to the fire of this just, it's so stupid. Like, J.K. Dobbins threw Tyler Huntley under the bus when Tyler Huntley had a really good game, because he said if we would have had Lamar, we would have won. Like, bro,
that's the other quote.
Quarterback, yep. The quarterback wasn't the issue in this game for the Ravens. Tyler Huntley played fine. Like, who knows what Lamar Jackson would have been if he had came back for the first time in 5 weeks with no practice. People were questioning his toughness. Oh, just get out there and like play for your team and everything. If he's not good to play, he's not good to play. Tyler Huntley was good to play, and he played pretty well. Like, he didn't play great. He obviously made one too many mistakes there that cost him the game, but I think it was really stupid what J.K. Dobbins said. I just find everything that this Ravens team says just really stupid. Like, these guys are just losers. It's not even fun to root against them or anything like that. And I might be sounding biased here, but like, I just hate the vibe that they give off with some of these quotes. Marcus Peters is a loser as well. He said some stupid stuff, and he did some stupid stuff on the field that it was clear for everyone.
Punched him in the ribs.
Sitting on Jamar Chase like the play before that. Like, it was clear the players were not happy with it. And again, just like we said last week, the Bengals players don't normally complain about stuff like this unless it actually happens and it's actually true and there's some weight behind it. And it's clear that Marcus Peters put on a really stupid show yesterday.
Yeah, and then we saw a little bit, I didn't see it as it happened, but I saw it later on, some of the twisting of legs and ankles again of Joe Mixon by Roquan Smith, I believe, after a couple of carries there. So, you know, the punch to the ribs thing was just like, what are you doing? I couldn't figure that one out there. But at any rate, those are some of the quotes coming out of there. And obviously the fans are believing that they feel like they should have won. I put out a tweet, John, kind of saying, hey, remember when the Bengals almost won with AJ McCarron? Kind of a similar vibe coming out from Baltimore side of things this week. And I don't know. Do you take any stock when they say, I mean, I know they want to say that, hey, we're the better team, or we would have won if we had our starting quarterback, all that kind of stuff. Do you take any stock in that, or is it just, you know, they're just kind of talking to talk?
Roquan Smith is just coping. That's just what you say when you play well and your team loses. Like, oh, you know, we're the better team, but sometimes the better team doesn't always win. Bro, just go to Cabo. Like, no one wants to do this.
Well said. Well said. All right. Just a couple of others here. From the AFC North, we like to kind of whip around some headlines before we hop out of here. Just a couple. Here's one from the Browns, Dogs by Nature, the Cleveland Browns site within the SB Nation network. And this is that the Cardinals hire a new GM, Monty Austin-Fort, and it could impact the Browns' defensive coordinator search. And how, you may ask? Well, Sean Desai was in town for an interview today after the Seahawks lost. And so they've already completed interviews with Jim Schwartz. Oh boy, would he, I don't know about that one. Brian Flores would be a good hire there. Denard Wilson and Gerard Mayo pulled himself out from consideration there, but they surprised the Arizona Cardinals, I guess, surprised some folks by hiring someone outside of the organization for their GM. He's a Tennessee Titans and New England Patriots executive, Monty Austin-Fort. And then Jim Harbaugh went back to Michigan. So I don't know, man. I don't know exactly. To me, it seems like Brian Flores probably should be, the front runner here, but we'll see.
Yeah, I'm be interested in that. Like, because the Steelers can't block him, like, obviously leaving or interviewing if he's just the positional coach and he's interviewing to be a coordinator, but that's still an assistant for one divisional team leaving for potentially another divisional team. So that shakes up the dynamic between both of those teams. And, you know, Flores can definitely coach. Like, he's a great defensive mind, and the Browns could definitely use a new one of those.
Well, not too much on the Steelers front, as they are prepping for the offseason as well. And we've gone upwards of 45 minutes on this one, talking about the Bengals, breaking down their win, breaking down their offensive line, and all kinds of different things. So hopefully you've enjoyed it. John, let's drop the mic and get out of here.
Again, just a great time yesterday. Shout out to Ron Spatola for allowing me to come back and watch another playoff win with him and his better half, Misty. And it was a great time yesterday. Again, shout out to my boys, Connor and Kyler, at the Blind Pig for a night that...
Do they work there?
I was just in line, and I was wearing the jacket that Randall was wearing. They're like, "Hey, that's a nice jacket, man." We just chopping it up. Next thing you know, I'm just downing shots with them. So it's a great night.
What was the shot of choice?
It was just the green tea. It wasn't anything much. The only thing that was missing was you, man. We need you back.
Oh, I know. Oh God, I know. I missed it. I had serious FOMO this weekend, and I'm seeing people taking pictures with Chad and Hoosh and all kinds of stuff, and I'm going, "Oh man, I just wish I could have swung it, just couldn't." But hopefully they either host the AFC Championship, or maybe I'll get my butt out to Arizona if everything makes sense there too. So we'll see. But at any rate, that's going to do it for us. Thank you, John, for your insights. Thanks to everybody for tuning in and leaving comments, watching us live, watching us after the fact, listening to us after the fact. We appreciate it. It's a passion project for us, and you guys make it fun for us, so we appreciate it. Bengals win 24-17. They are on to Buffalo for a game that I think quite a few people will be very interested in. By the way, that's going to be, I believe, Sunday at 3 Eastern, correct? Mm-hmm. Is that what they decided? Yeah. So definitely tune in for that, and tune in for what we got coming for you the rest of this week. Oh, and one other thing. If you want to win some prizes like we put out on our Twitter account, you got to subscribe to our channels, and you got to submit a donation to Ken Anderson Alliance. You've only got a few days left before we announce some winners. We've already got some people showing us proof. So go do all of that. Show us some proof. Donate to the Ken Anderson Alliance, and you'll get some cool swag. Thanks, everybody. Take care. We'll see you next time.